Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunantu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu
Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, 44, bottom. Deity worship should be continued along with hearing and chanting. Therefore, every mantra is preceded by the word namah. In all the mantras, there are specific potencies of which the grihastha devotees must take advantage. There are many mantras preceded by the word namaha. But if one chants the holy name of the Lord, he receives the result of chanting namaha many times. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can reach the platform of love of Godhead. One might ask, then what is the necessity of being initiated? The answer is that even though the chanting of the holy name is sufficient to enable one to progress in spiritual life to the standard of love of Godhead, one is nonetheless susceptible to contamination because of possessing a material body. Consequently, special stress is given to the archan vidhi. One should therefore regularly take advantage of both the Bhagavat process and the Pancha Retriti process. Yeah, so the holy name himself, he can take care of everything. That's not the problem. The problem is us. Right? It means the weak part of the process is us, not the process itself, right? So because of our contamination, we get distracted by so many things, right? We've been going on and on about the fine details, right? So within the karma and the jnana, then there's going to be distraction. So the idea is that the pancharatric process, it regulates the lifestyle. And by regulating the lifestyle, then that breaks down the material attachment. Regulation always breaks down attachment. Right, at least on the material platform. Just like if something is there, you just do it whenever you want, you're very excited. But as soon as it's okay, every time this happens, then, you know, I mean, how you say it? You like going out to this place or that place. So then, okay, every Thursday night we're going to go to this place. So that's great for 1 or 2 weeks, but after a while, then it'll lose something, right? So that's the idea, is that by regulating the life, it takes that extra excitement or specialness out of the mundane. Right? Because the mundane doesn't have any specialness. It's an illusion that it does. But we think it does because of the mental speculation. So when you regulate it, the mental speculation then has to deal with all these other things that gets distracted. So by breaking it down, it makes it so much easier to deal. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that's one advance, one point. And then the other is the mantras themselves have specific potencies. They're describing different aspects. So one should take advantage of that. By contemplating, they deal with all the different elements. You know, the beauty of the Lord, the different position of the Lord, our position. So the tendency is that we already have our idea. We're position, we're center of the universe. You know, we're special, we're wonderful. You know, we're good looking. You know, everything around us is good looking. You know, all these kind of things like that. So then we start to see that someone else is actually better looking and better situated and all that. So slowly, you know. And also the mantras, and they're describing the philosophy you know, more aspects, you know, the relationship, how it functions, right? The Gayatris then describe the Sambandha, Abhidaya, and Prayojana. So these things start to change one's perspective. So Prabhupada's point here is that therefore one should take advantage of this. Right? Don't just, it's being done as a ritual. One should take advantage and understand what's actually happening. Right? Yes?
When it says in the end that one should take advantage of both the Bhagavad process and the Pancharakshi, does the Bhagavad refer to the chanting of the holy name?
Yes, yeah. Means chanting the Maha Mantra. Like that. That's good. Chanting the Maha Mantra, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees. Like that. That's the.
The word Namaha, I am not. I've always not. Is it I am not? Namaha.
Oh, it's I offer my respects. Or I. Namo means then like down or bowing. I'm sure that there's many elements to it. But it's saying that it ends with that. Or preceded by the word Nama, because you're going to. Yeah, the Pancharatri texts, they'll have that, and then they'll get into the specifics. Like you're installing the deities, and when you're dealing with the different nyasas, Om Nama, Om Nama, like this, they'll always have. And, but this is that I'm offering my respects to. You know, okay. So that element of submission then becomes very important. So, yes.
You mentioned about regulation, that it takes out mundane. What about regulating the spiritual?
The spiritual, then you are constantly, because that's what you're supposed to be doing, then, because we don't have the taste for it. See, material will do anyway. And because even if we don't have taste for one thing, the speculative abilities have been, you know, well developed. So if one thing doesn't work, we'll think of another. Right, you get a bunch of friends together, and hey, what do we do? Yeah, we'll do this. Nah, we did that last week. Oh, what about this? Don't think of something; they'll always work something out. So, but for the spiritual, that we don't have that taste, so the tendency is we won't do it. So, by regulating, then we expose ourselves to it, and this way we're purified. And by that purification, then the taste comes, because that's natural. That's the natural position. Does that make sense? So the other, then it takes out the excitement of constantly, you know, changing and doing this and that. You know what I'm saying? Because you regulate. So then you have to create that within that regulated environment. So it reduces the scope. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it works. Deity worship has two divisions, namely pure and mixed with fruitive activities. For one who is steady, deity worship is compulsory. Observing the various types of festivals such as Sri Janmashtami, Ram Navami, and Narsingha Chaturdasi is also included in the process of deity worship. In other words, it is compulsory for householder devotees to observe these festivals. Because right, there's something that changed. A festival also in the Sanskrit is Utsava. Sava means difficulties, or, you know, all the different pains in day-to-day life. So ut means to rise above. So an utsava takes you above that, because it's something different, special. So one forgets, you know, and one had a great time, but one doesn't think about the normal stuff. Day-to-day life, or even day-to-day worship, one might forget. This is by habit. You go every day, you do exactly the same thing. You might think of something else, right? Like as we said, when you're practicing a new skill, you think exactly of the skill. Once you get habituated, then you can think of anything and do it. But a festival is different. So you'll be absorbed in the festival. So it will change. It will bring you above the regular daily activities. So that's very important. So it says deity worship have two divisions, pure and mixed with fruitive activities. So mixed with fruitive activities, the mode of passion, one does it for a result. You know, the mode of passion means you make the endeavor that you want some result. So you're worshiping the deity, you're praying to the deity for some material result. But pure means you're doing it to please the Lord. So same like in the devotional service that you have the in the Bhuti Yoga, then the elements of karma and jnana can have fruit of elements. You know, and that's the inspiration, that's why one's using it. But it should come to the platform where it's pure, where one's just using those elements to please Krishna. So the deity worship's the same. Yes.
It says, for one who is steady, what is meant by steady?
For one who is steady, because if you're not steady, then you can't do deity worship. You know, I mean on a regular basis. It means taking part. See, you could say active and passive. So that could have also various applications. But let's say you're coming to the temple program. It can be passive that you're just doing it because it's supposed to be done, but you're not putting any focus into it. You know, you're there, you're existing in the transcendental state, but you're not exact, it's not dynamic. So, or one can see is that one's coming to the program and trying to take advantage of, you know, the association of the devotees, association of the deities, the holy name, you know, prasad, charanamrita, you know, all these different things that are there, and try to concentrate and do nicely. So then it becomes dynamic. So someone who's steady will be able to focus. Someone who's not steady, then it'll be a problem. So they can get the most advantage out of it. It also could mean that they are taking part directly, I mean, how you say, personally doing the different worship. You know, take dressing the deity, doing artics, doing the different elements like that. So then that makes it even more focused, if that facility is there. If not, then that's why we have the temple. Because the temple, everybody can be engaged in deity worship. Does that make sense?
Think that for everybody it would be compulsory, because to become steady, then the pancharajic process is given.
Yes, no, but by following it, then it will be there. But once it becomes steady, then you get more advantage. Just like you see, when one comes to the platform nishta, the advantage you get from chanting is much greater than when there was anishta bhakti. Right? So they should be following, but the point is sometimes to follow, sometimes night, sometimes enthusiastic, sometimes not. You know, like that. So the point is there is you do the best you can. Right? So that's there. But when one's steady, then one can focus, and then it becomes a compulsory thing where you're trying to properly take advantage. Does that make sense? Before that, you're doing your best. So it has both the liberal and the conservative element. It means it should be everybody is taking advantage, but if someone's unsteady, it's very hard to do. So they do the best they can. Does that make sense?
Would that mean that you're steady, it's better to observe the program, and then when you're steady, then...
You could also look at it that way, because it's supposed to be by qualification that the second initiated devotee is a madhyamadhikari also, so that would indicate steadiness. So here that could also mean this, for one who is steady or nishta, which means they have second initiation. So it's also saying a second initiated devotee, deity worship is compulsory. Otherwise, why have it? You know what I'm saying? It means maybe 20 years ago it had, you know, a prestigious element to it. Nowadays, I don't think anybody really cares, you know. Like that, you know, because before the trappings of the Vedic culture kind of had a meaning. Nowadays, I don't think they mean much, you know, like that. You know, if you're really into it, you can go, you know, hang out in Vrindavan, and you can, you know, get the beads and, you know, do all the things and wear the stuff, and, you know, then it may, you know, you get a few people who appreciate, but. Is that. Now let us discuss the offenses in deity worship. The following are offenses, right? It's not the following, you know, could be seen as or might be termed. No, the following are offenses. See, there's the point Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes, is that when you're dealing violence, we have a concept of violence. Violence generally we're taking as something that creates emotional or... Yeah, on the body, mind, or words, a disturbance for material progress of these aspects. We'll call that violence. But the real violence is when that obstacles are placed, material obstacles are placed in the way of spiritual development. Right? So therefore, the speaking boldly and clearly, then that's nonviolent. That's actual humility, because that is, you're delivering the message, right? Which is true. Well, to compromise, then that's violence, because the person could get benefited and you're not. Though they may or may not appreciate. It's just like, who appreciates, you know, I say, you know, having an operation or something in the hospital? It's not like they're just, you know, in ecstasy. Wow, when is this all going to happen, right? You know, so that's not, but it would be considered improper if it wasn't done, and if it would give benefit. Does that make sense? So therefore, you see, though the points are made and the encouragement is there, but the clarity is not something to compromise. Now, how much you can do, how much you apply it in your life, that's the point where then one discusses. But the point of whether it's true, what is truth and what is illusion, that's direct. You understand the difference? It means these are offenses. Now, how you deal with them, how you work it into your life, that's where then you see all the nice stuff. But, you know, these are offenses. It doesn't matter if we like it or not, right? A, to enter the temple with shoes or being carried on a palanquin, right? Like that. So, I mean, you know, the British had more of a problem with this one when they came like that. So, because here is that the taking off the shoes, one, of course, the cleanliness, but the element of humility, right? You come and it's something special. It's inside. It's consideration of someone else's. Or the palanquin, because palanquin you're being carried, because, you know, yeah. To be carrying a palanquin means someone has to be carrying. You have to have a palanquin and servants, so you'd have to have some facility. Right? So it's the idea is that you get out of your palanquin, you take off your shoes, you know, coming before the Lord. B, not to observe the prescribed festivals. Right? When there's a festival, then one should take, they're there for a reason. Right? The spiritual world, they're always going on, every day's a festival. So we're given the opportunity to, on something once a year, to take part, right? And like Julon, that's something that regularly goes on in the spiritual world. But here, at least once a year, it's done, right? It can also be done at other times. So when there's a big, big festival, some other thing, or this, it can be worked in. But at least once a year, then that is offered, right? You know, on the appearance day, then there's an abhishek. But Krishna, Mother Yashoda bathes Krishna every day. Right, so it's not a once a year program, right? You know, perfection of deity worship. Yeah, how often do I have to change the dress? And only once a year, Krishna's, you know, like that. Jamashtami is a good day, you know. C, to avoid offering obeisances in front of the deity. It means you're there, but there's something else important you got to do, so you have a reason why you're not offering obeisances. Right? It means when you're going into the temple, then you offer obeisances, but you happen to be walking by and you're just going to go do this service, but you see the deity, so should I offer obeisances or not? So the point is, don't avoid offering obeisances. D, to offer prayers in an unclean state, not having washed one's hands after eating. So, offering of service should be done in a clean state, because Krishna will interact. So if you're not clean, how is he going to interact nicely, right? You know, it's just like somebody's just finished eating and their hands, all this and that. They start talking to you, it's kind of like, yes. That means if it applies, yes. Right. Means, like you said before, where's appropriate? So that means according to one's situation. So if one can fast, yes. If one has a health condition, one can't fast, then one doesn't. Does that make sense? To offer obeisances with one hand, right? Because you're not paying attention to that. You're trying to do many things, you know, we're multitasking. We do many things at once, right? You know. So, yeah. So obeisances means two hands. When we say panchanga, you know, pranam, we mean the legs, the two arms, and the head. So if you're only using one hand, then that's, you know, four. Yeah, chaturanga, you know, like that. You know. Or sometimes you see these little kids are so flexible. They'll be sitting there, titties open, they just lean forward and touch their head. So just the two knees and their head, you know, like that. F, to circumambulate directly in front of the deity, by worshipping someone else in front of the deity. So it's always done around the deity, or when one's doing circumambulation, then the deities are closed. Yes?
In that topic, you know, when the deity are open, you know, can we sometimes, I saw some devotee like walking, chanting the japa, but not around the deity, in the temple hall.
That you're not circumambulating. Circumambulating means there's something in the center that you're offering respect by keeping the right side and going around.
Yes.
But going like that, so that's called circles. Does that make sense? I mean, they're similar.
Yes.
Yeah, you understand that. But the idea is to tell the difference. Is that, you know, the ones you're just chanting and they happen to be trying to walk and somehow or another they're going in a circle. But that's not circumambulating. Circumambulating is a type of worship. You know, just like artiks in circles, so it's not that he's performing a special kind of artik. You know, full-bodied artik, right, going around in circles. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Maharaj, I had a loophole question about the basis.
Oh, basis.
Yeah, if you have your bead bag in your hand.
So why don't you do something else with the bead bag?
We have to set it aside.
That or in such a way that you can get your hand on the ground and hold your bead bag. Well, that's not exactly.
Because sometimes you see, like holding it or putting it, on the back of the hand.
Yeah, I mean, you try whatever it is. The point is that there is the element of just how much is focused on the obeisances.
Yeah,
right? Because bandhanam will come up, I think, you know, so then. Because the better these are done, then especially in bandhanam, then you get the results more. You know, if that's not your main element, like someone likes to offer prayers and that's a major aspect of the service, then these things become more important. Like that. But in other words, the point is five angas touch the ground or eight touch the ground. So that includes both hands. Is that okay? Yeah.
What about worshipping the gurus in front of the deities?
I was waiting for that. I thought he was going to bring that up. But he left this one for you this time. Like that. Anyone else could see that one coming? And this is okay, here it is, right? Is it? What about it?
Some of them don't like it.
Some of them don't like it. Means who's the sum?
Some gurus.
Some gurus don't like it. So, is that a problem?
What shastras say about it?
What do shastras say about it? Things like Shakshad Hari Tvena Samasta Shastrair. Like that. That all the scriptures say that the spiritual master and Krishna are non-different. He represents. Or as we saw, the devotee coming to the platform of prema, then he's saying that first you came as the spiritual master, and then he's talking to Krishna. First you came as the spiritual master, and this way then you brought me to the path, and now you're, you know, and by his grace, now you're personally present before me. You know what I'm saying? The point is, if you're the representative, what's the problem? Like that. One is humble, but the point is the office is still there. You know what I'm saying?
So the humbleness should not impose itself upon the office.
Yes. Like that. But, you know, if you'd prefer to have the worship somewhere else, that's fine. That's not a problem. But that it happens in front of the deities and all that, that's not a problem at all. Anybody who complains, they have a problem with authority, not with the gurus. It's an individual personal thing, you know. Like either in general or, you know, I made him a devotee, you know, how is he, you know, these kind of things. It's purely mundane. Maybe even you could go as far, pure unalloyed mundane. In fact, you could probably even say it's profane, right? You know, it's against the scriptures. They'll say all this, that, and you're humble, and who are you to think? But it's not. It's not a matter of that. There's the office. That's what the office does. The individual may feel himself very humble, but, you know. Is that okay? But if they want to do it somewhere else other than the temple, that's fine. Yeah.
When we are worshipping, Tulasi altar should be closed.
Yeah, generally. It's always closed. But it also works out because that's when the offering's going on and the food is going on. So. But generally, because you're going to circumambulate. Yeah. Yes. No, there's not. But you can talk about it for the next. I've been answering this particular question for the last 30 years, and it still is not understood. How can you do no? This is that. Question is can you offer obeisances to gurus and sannyasis when the deities are open, or in the some even in the temple room at all, right? You know, like that. So. Yes, no problem, because those are separate elements. It's here circumambulation is the problem, or worshipping someone else, but that someone else means someone, means is the demigod Krishna. No, that's someone else. Means the potencies are there as from Krishna, but then why worship through the demigod? But is the spiritual master someone else? That's the point. Like that. So the someone else means, you know, demigods and other personalities like that.
On the other side, is it offensive to not pay licenses to the sannyasis in the temple?
No.
Okay.
It's up to you. But it's in India, it's pretty standard. It's in the West that, you know, it becomes such a. Probably because the temple's so big here, if a few people offer obeisances, if you see somebody that doesn't, you don't even notice it. But in the West, you have this small little temple. Mm-hmm. So they walk in, the whole temple offers obeisances. Mm-hmm. So then somebody gets bent out of shape. So. But it's one of those things. It's an unanswerable question because it's actually dealing with an artist. It's not dealing with the spiritual topic. Is that okay? But it doesn't. It's not. G, to spread one's legs before the deity, right? One doesn't relax, sit back, stick one's legs out, you know, and stuff like that. One always sits formally.
Leaning against the wall?
The wall's Balaram. Means the temple is Balaram. So, if you got a good relation, hey, cool. You know. But otherwise, you know, even if one is leaning, if it's necessary, but it should be formal leaning, not informal leaning. Does that make sense? To sit before the deity while holding one's ankles with one's hands, right? Because those are also mudras, because the legs are open. It's also, I'm not sure if it mentions here, but also this one, it's a mudra of sankalpa, determination, that we're humble before the deity. So therefore that, this other one's like this, you know, holding that way. Then we don't use those. To lie down before the deity, right? That's taking the previous one to a step further, right? You know, like that. To eat before the deity, right? You know, to have a sit down regular meal like that. You get some mahaprasad, that's not such a problem. But generally, you go a little bit to the side, you know, like that. You know,
if it's at home. We shouldn't eat before the deity.
At home. Well, it depends upon your house. If it's basically a studio, so the only alternatives are in the kitchen or in the toilet, then you don't have much alternative. Oh, so you have a bedroom. Okay, cool. Studio, there's no bedroom. Studio, living room is the bedroom. So. It depends on the setup and everything like that and how directly in front and how proximity and all that. Point is that you're going to be eating, but the deity's there, you won't be thinking of the deity. You know? And depending upon your particular level of sophistication, it might be something okay to watch or not. You know what I'm saying? So these considerations that, you know, so much of the time if it's in front of you, that's the only place, and you put up the screen or whatever it is like that. So that's generally, or eat somewhere else. But if you're just distributing some mahaprasad in the hand, that you don't have to worry about it. It's talking about, you know, proper meals and eating. You know, when there's something more than just popping it in your mouth without touching your hands. When you start touching your hands to your mouth, that's when the rule comes in.
Yes. Maharishi Swami comments that when he receives mahaprasad from some Brahmana in the temple, we should consider that as Krishna personality had given us. So
yes.
Like respectfully take it with gratitude and just have some treat about eating.
Yes. No, that's there. But that's what I said. You just go a little to the side or something. You don't sit there right in front of the deity. Like that. So, yeah. It's not a problem. All these things is that they have their point, their balance. So one doesn't take it too far one way or the other. Because remember, that we're talking about the middle path. So either way is off the path. You know, we're too liberal or too conservative, you know, like that. It's both are wrong. It has a purpose because you're dealing with a person. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, because the point is, you know, if I'm talking with someone and if I'm sitting here, then it has one kind of thing. You know, I sit here and start leaning around like that. It has a whole different mood. So unless I have a relaxed mood with the person, how can I do that? So, you know, in the Pancharatra worship, there is no such relaxed relationship with the deity. You know what I'm saying? So that's why these things are there. They're to establish the proper mood according to our situation with the Lord. You know, it's not that you can't eat in front of the deity and that makes it the devotional service. No, it's that the deity is there and, you know, get Mahaprasad, and the deity, pop your mouth, like, fine. But now what are you going to do? So you're going to have to go to the side anyway, you know. You know what I'm saying? So like this. So it's a matter of what's, you know what I'm saying? Because they give you something, kitchen, you're going to eat it or something like that, or some sweet rice. Then what are you going to do? Walk around the temple with your hands dirty? No, you're going to go find some place to wash. So you could have also gone a little out of the way to eat. You know what I'm saying? You know, if it's the arrangement, they're giving out to everybody there and all that, and then afterwards everyone goes out and washes, that's another thing, but it's arranged. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's a mood. So it's the deity's arranged it, but at the same time, is just because the deity arranged it doesn't mean you shouldn't consider the deity in honoring it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because generally when they give out Mahaprasadam, where do they give it out?
On the side.
It's never right in front of the deity. Or if it's in directly in front of the deity, it's because the opening to the deity room is only 5 feet wide. Anyway, you know, but when, you know, the opening is 30 feet wide, then you generally see it's on the side. So that's the right, you're on the side. That's what we're talking about. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned the middle way, the middle path. And usually in the popular books, it's attributed to Buddha TM, the middle path. But of course, this is universal principle, right? In the Vedic literature.
Who came first?
Of course.
Yeah. Where does the example of the elephant and the six blind men come from?
Pancha.
Yeah, but I'm saying, did it come from?
No.
So, in other words, they've simply lifted the culture and other things like that from there. It's just the conclusions are atheistic. Like that. I make it uncomfortable at the middle path, or you feel even better, like, you know.
No, I didn't have any doubt, but. You said,
I mean, okay, so I'll use the razor's edge, you know, just a little bit thinner, you know, like that. You know. And then there can be discussions on razor's edge. Does that mean like a, you know, is that Gillette or is that Schick or is that Wilkinson sword? Or, to speak lies before the deity, right? Because it's not like you're going to fool the deity, right? You know, like that. So it's not worth it. L, to address someone loudly before the deity, right? You talk nicely, you don't talk too loud. You don't talk to the, you know, your friends. Like you see in the temple, you know, there's a group of them and someone gets out of there and they're shouting and this and that. You know, it's annoying. Like that. To talk nonsense before the deity, right? Yeah, because also, one that has no taste and the Lord knows it's nonsense, right? To cry before the deity, right? So he sees all these things here as anything that takes it, we forget the deity's there and it just becomes our own activity of talking, eating, sleeping, relaxing, you know, not being respectful of these different things, you know. To argue before the deity, right? You know, that's where the saying comes from, you know, step outside, right? You know, like that. You know, the arguments are always outside, not in front of the deity, right? You know, that's the whole point. Right? To chastise someone before the deity, right? So that can be done at another time or some other place. So when saying some points on the philosophy, that's one thing, but in actual, you know, management or other things like that, it's done at another place because it'll disturb others. Deity doesn't need to hear all those things. To show someone favor before the deity, right? So the opposite, you know, that personally favoring like that, you know, out of you know, material considerations. So that's not allowed. To use harsh words before the deity, right? So much to try to use nice language. Yes. You don't fight. It's like everybody's thinking, wow, I got to get some deity. I was thinking, you know, what do you think, you know, what do you think, I will have deities in all the rooms. Huh? Oh, I mean, fighting in front of them, that's what I mean. Well, you know, generally it's, in other words, don't be standing right in front of the altar and do that, you know, go a little bit to, you know, some side or something like that. You know, it depends what you're going to say also, so. Because home is slightly different, because then you're dealing with atiti, but atiti then means the guest. Atiti means a guest that all attention is given. Like basically, atiti means the whole house goes around that person. That's the meaning of atiti. Not all guests are atiti. You know what I'm saying? A friend comes over, they're not an atiti. They just fit into what's going on. Relatives, they're just atiti. I mean, they just fit in. Atiti means like, you know, some senior person, like, you know, the Brahman, like this, then it stops and all attention is given, right? So then in that case, you'd be somewhat considerate.
So it's advisable to have a separate room for the
baby? That, or just, you know, escort the child to another room and then explain to them what's happening. You know, it just means one has to be more conscious. All these things do is make one conscious of the deity, because chastisement means there must be some, this, you know, some one is disturbed about something. So in that disturbed state, you still have to be able to remember that the deity is there. Then it increases. You know, you want to eat, you remember the deity is there. You're relaxing, you remember the deity is there. You know, all these different things. You want to show favor, you remember the deity is there. So all these different aspects. So at all times and all different mentalities of what one will do in one's day-to-day life, one considers the deity in them. Does that sound right? Okay. To wear a woolen blanket before the deity, that means, here blanket doesn't mean a chadar, blanket means what you sleep in. Right? So you sleep in it, get up, wrap it around, then go before the deity. So the ones you sleep in aren't the ones you wear in front of the deities. Right? Like that. Right? They get stinky. right? So it's thought again in consideration of the deity. To blaspheming someone before the deity, right? Because for Krishna, everybody is his parts and parcels, so there's no question that he appreciates that. You know. You to worship someone else before the deity, right? So that means someone else, not the deity or expansions of the deity, meaning different Vishnumurtis, like you have deity of Krishna and then the Shringadevas worship before him, or the spiritual master, like that. V, to use vulgar language before the deity, right? So that's a little bit more harsh than chastised, then harsh, then blasphemy, then vulgar. You know, so it's just a natural, you know, getting okay, I don't blaspheme. Can I use vulgar language? Okay, not vulgar, but can I blaspheme? You know, it's like that. So it's trying to catch all the loopholes, right? Pancharatra is meant for the loopholes, right? Yeah, because it has the conditioned soul in mind. To pass air before the deity, right? A bit obvious, right? So if the deity doesn't notice, someone else will. Like that. So to avoid very opulent worship of the deity, even though one is able to perform it. So to just simple things for the deities and that, but for oneself, all kinds of nice stuff. So you know, like that. You avoid that. To eat something not offered to the deity, right? So what you're at the deity's place, whatever's offered to the deity. You want to eat something different, offer it to the deity. So that's the idea. Yes?
If you bring Mahaprasadam from the Radha Madhava.
So that's...
from the deity, but not from the deity at home, is that okay?
The deity at home is an expansion of... Yeah, so. But that doesn't mean you only eat that and they don't get anything to eat. Okay, you have to make sure they're eating also.
But then that's strong, but then bringing pizzas and things, which has...
No, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same thing, but it's saying there has to be... whatever's your regular offerings during the day, those should be there. You know? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
No, it does. I was just wondering if you bring something which is not from the deity, like you buy in a shop and take home.
Yeah, but the point is it's Mahaprasad, then they've already eaten it. The point is but you have a service to offer them things to eat, so that has to go on. But that's outside. Yes.
Is this offense applicable to yesterday's story about the deities and the picture? So if we have deity, then we should be dedicated to offer clothes and bath. So is this offense applicable? Like you have deity, but you're not doing the clothes.
Yeah, it'd be similar kind of thing. Yeah, but here specifically, and you have... you avoid opulent worship, even though, like, let's say you buy the cheap Navadvip incense for the deities, but you know you've just bought the $150 perfume for your wife. You know, that's what it's talking about. You know, like that. You know, you get all kinds of nice things. You eat your snack yourself, but the deities just get their little, you know, something like that.
Yeah, popcorn and dal.
Huh?
Popcorn and dal.
Popcorn and dal. But at least you'd have to go out of the way to cook the popcorn.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah, so it's...
Learn from the master.
Yes. Okay. Z, to avoid offering fresh fruits to the deity according to the season. So whatever's in season that you offer. Right, you know. So in the West, everything's always available. So then, you offer whatever you know, whatever's available.
It's always in season somewhere.
Yeah. It's flown in from somewhere. I mean, some places, I think like Singapore, they don't grow anything there. Maybe orchids, but other than that, but you know, Hong Kong also, I think that's food
from
comes from somewhere
else.
Yeah. Sand is but it's always in season. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the only fruit they get there is pearls. That's about it.
This point also touches rasa, because...
Rasa. How does it touch rasa? We are waiting. We are.
Because it is healthy to eat seasonal fruits and vegetarian, so if Krishna doesn't get them, it's not healthy.
True. But it's also that generally the thing grows in the season because that's the nicest time for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say it's, you know, there's snow on the ground outside, right? And you're out on a, you know, out walking in the woods. Would you like to stop and have a, you know, a bite of watermelon or something? No, that's why watermelons grow in the summer when it's hot. You know what I'm saying? So it grows in the season that it's nice in. Like that. The environment, everything like that. That's the traditional. It's also then therefore the time when it's good for the health. But that's the nicest when it will be appreciated. Plus then you have the variety. That's the thing. In the West it's always available, so there's no variety. But in India it's there and then it goes away. You know, so when it first comes, you're very enthusiastic. And the end of the season, you've eaten so much of it, you're happy that it disappeared. But then, by the time it comes around next time, then you're happy it's back. You know, does that make sense? So that's the advantage of the seasons. Like, you know, like now we're thinking, oh, good, it's cooling down and all that, and you know, it was so hot. Give it another month, and we'll be wondering when it will it warm up. You know, like that. You know, and as soon as it gets hot, when is it going to cool down? So it's. The idea is that the seasons create the variety.
Does that mean that every day you have to just cut some fruits and offer to the deity?
Every day you cut fruits and offer to the deity. If fruits are available, then you would offer. You know, but the point is that what is available in that season, don't not offer it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Something comes up, maybe you don't regularly offer fruits, but if something comes up, then it can be offered. You know, when it's new. The idea is that it's not, oh, we only offer this, so as the season changes, we don't change anything. Like that. That may be good for, that boringness may be good for you, but for the deity, you know, the variety is. AA, to offer food to the deity which has already been used or from which has first been given to others. In other words, food should not be distributed to anyone else until it has been offered to the deity. Right? So Krishna gets first, then it's distributed to everyone. No? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
One thing I was aware of that in my poem is that whenever a new season of fruits came, they often decorate the altar.
Yeah, you can do that also.
And I've always thought
Yeah.
No, that's, produce,
yeah.
You know, like
yeah. Yeah. It's also grains, or it's very common. Navadanya, it's one festival. You don't see it so much here. You get it in the villages. When the fresh rice comes, because it's very soft, you can't cook it. You know, it'll just turn into mush. But they take that and roughly grind it and mix it with, I think I remember this, milk, sugar, camphor, and other things like that. It's a very nice preparation. But it's always, you know, and anything new is offered to the deity. That's the idea. Double B, to sit with one's back towards the deity. Because then, you know, the idea of being in the temple is to put the front to the deity. Because this, somehow or another, seems most all the senses are on the front side, you know. So you can relate better that way. One can sit sideways, right? So it can apply. I mean, before it used to be, you have Prabhupada and the deities, and everyone would face the center, you know, like that. Now, you know, though no one really worries about stuff like that. To offer obeisances to someone else in front of the deity, right? So to worship someone else before the deity, to offer obeisances to someone else. So this someone here means someone who is not represented. Like that. To offer. Double D, not to chant prayers proper prayers when offering obeisances to the spiritual master, right? So you're not just offering obeisances, because the obeisance includes, you know, the prayer, the mind, seeing the deity, right? You see the curtains open, you see the deity, then you're remembering the deity, and then when you offer obeisances, then you... So that's part of the obeisance. Double E, to praise oneself before the deity, right? Hopefully obvious here. Double F, to blaspheme the demigods, because they are office holders, but they don't represent the devotional element, right? The spiritual master, the Vaishnavas do, but the demigods don't. But still, they're office holders. They're managing the universe so that, you know, we have air and light and, you know, other things like that to take advantage of. So we shouldn't speak badly about it, you know, unless you want somebody turning them off or something. So. In the worship of the deities, these 32 offenses should be avoided. Right, so these are the main. Not sure if he mentions where these were from. Then you have in the Varaha Purana, the following offenses are mentioned. So these are the 32, and then these are other ones. Like that. A, to eat in the house of a rich man, right? Because you're just going there to eat, right? Because why you're going? Because he's a rich man. You're going there because they're devotees and you're interacting. That's another thing. It doesn't mean if the devotee's rich, you can't eat in his house. But means it would mean considering only going to rich devotees' houses, you know, like that. Right? Because then the idea is just the opulence and everything like that. So it's not that it's the prasad. Right? B, to enter the deity room in the dark, right? There must be some light. Means if you're in your bed, right, and you know, suddenly you notice someone's in the room but you can't see, are you comfortable? No, so there should be some light, not a lot of light. You know, it's not like you turn on the bright lights. No, it's just enough that you can see, like that. C, to worship the deity without following the regulative principles, right? You don't just make up and do whatever you like. You follow the rules. The rules are there because that's the way Krishna likes it, right? D, to enter the temple without vibrating any sound. Right? There should be some sound that you're coming, you say something, and like that. Because that's the normal thing. You come into a room, it's known you're coming. Right? It's something, you don't see it as much. I heard someone the other day making the comment just how the culture in India is being lost, that like when the men go into another room, like where the ladies are, they don't make a sound first. Right? It's a normal thing. If the women are in a room, when the man walks into the room, he'll make a sound. He'll cough, do something that they know he's coming to the room, because you don't want someone just walking in. You want to know they're coming. So in the same way, as you're busy doing something, you don't want just someone to walk in. You want to know. That's why knocking is there and these other elements, right? It's standard culture behavior. Yes?
What about when we enter the temple where the deities are taking rest? Isn't it disturbing for them? Yeah,
but the point is then you're not interacting with the deity, you're interacting with the temple, right? So then your service is the temple or something there. Yeah.
Here in the Mahaprabhu temple, and there's not a kirtan on it, and the deities are open, there's a devotee whose job is to walk around the temple.
Well, he's supposed to be singing.
Uh-huh.
But he's singing very quietly. Yeah.
So there should always be glorification.
That's another thing. That's on seva. That won't be an offense. That would be that, you know, if there's always some kind of glorification of the Lord going on, that would be proper service. You know, because in the 64 items, you have your main times and you have in between. So like that, that would be their Prabhupada wanted there to always be kirtan. So 24 hours there would be something like that. So then, that's different than this. This is that you're coming to the temple, therefore you knock, ring the bell, say, you know, like that, you know, Jai Radha Madhava, something is said like that. That's standard. Yes?
Yeah, Maharaj, would it be offensive to offer obeisances when the altar is closed and the deities are taking rest?
Offering obeisances
to the deities.
The point is, if the deities are resting, how will you offer obeisances to them? So can you tell the... So the point is you're leaving the temple, right? No?
Yeah.
Or coming into the temple. So you're offering obeisances to the Krishna's place, you know, to the Dham or like that. When the deities open, then you offer obeisances to the deities. You understand? Just like we were saying before on, you know, circles, you know, it's similar, but you have to be able to tell the difference. So there's different varieties of obeisances. So to the deity, because you're seeing the deity, you know, like that. So there's a difference between your offering to the deity and to, you know, it's his place and like that. Is that okay?
Should we also avoid circumambulating the deities while they are sitting
rest? Means you wouldn't circumambulation is a type of service, so that wouldn't be rendered when the deities are closed. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. That's you know. Yeah, that's pretty standard. Yes.
But is it that we should avoid it, or is it that it just doesn't give any benefit? Or I mean, some people are japa walking.
Means it. See, I'm pointing out the difference, but it's not that those persons that are doing that understand the difference. See, is circumambulation means you're thinking of the deity and you are circumambulating. Right, then it becomes circumambulation. You just happen to be walking around, though that kind of benefit will be there, but it's not the same as you understand that now I am offering obeisances, now I am circumambulating, now I am offering prayers, now I'm like this. So they're walking around. So if they're not thinking that I am doing this out of service and I'm getting benefit from walking around the deity, but it's just somehow or another that's the only place to chant, then that will work. But if they're actually thinking that they're circumambulating the deities, then that wouldn't be correct. Does that make sense? But most places, Amy's major temples and that, then when the offering's going on, the deities close, they close the walkways. Mm-hmm. You can't walk through those areas. I think when before the extension, I think Radha Madhavas, they did close it. Does that make sense? Okay. E, to collect food that has been seen by a dog. Right? Because the dogs naturally see something to eat, then they just want to eat it. So then it will be impure. So therefore, one is very careful that the animals don't see when you're cooking, and when you're carrying the boga to the deities, that it's always covered so that animals, two or four-legged, don't get overly excited. Okay.
How it should be covered?
How it should be covered?
Is there some rule?
Is there some rule? Means you take it and first you take it and pull it out of your sleeve with great, you know, how you say, panache. And then you flip it like this, and then, you know, first you get rid of the pigeon or whatever else happens to be in there. Right? Then you, because you have it with one hand, because the other hand it was up the sleeve, right? So you pull it out. Also make sure it's red. Right, then you take the other left hand, and by grabbing next to the corner where the one hand is, then you pull it out so it's out flat. Then you take it and flip it so it goes flat and then horizontally, then drops very nicely. Like that.
Can you also pull flowers out of the sleeve?
Yes, you could, but generally you wait till you're in the deity room for that. But flowers are generally offered with incense, so then you'd have to pull them both out. Now, if you could pull them out lit... what's actually the question?
In the West, sometimes the devotees, they use other iron pot or something.
An iron pot? That works. Does it have a handle on the top?
No.
Then they're not even following the Western tradition. You've got the big platter and the round thing. You can do that. It works. main point is to get it covered, but then there's also the level of sophistication. So if their level of personal sophistication is only that much, then it's great. But if personally they're more sophisticated than that, then you'd expect them to improve the quality. Right? But covering with something else other than cloth is fine. Like that. You can use banana leaf, you can use lotus leaf.
Right.
Eating with animals. Eating with the, that sounds like a title of a book or something. Eating with animals. Have the rights for the movies been worked out yet, or no? What about eating with animals? Who's this they? Yeah. Well, my mom has cats, but she's not a devotee, so I don't think you have to worry about Ma Prasad there. Oh, in front of Ma Prasad in the temple. Oh, not your own personal cats. Oh, okay. I'm not sure the cats are really interested in Ma Prasad.
They are very much.
Yeah. I know that you discriminate between Prasadam and Mahaprasadam.
Between Rasamalai and a regular
bowl. That's because it's a dairy product and all that. So then if you're there and they're there, then you give them some. But not right there where everyone will step on it, because sometimes they eat it, sometimes they leave half of it. So you on the side, you know, like that. That works.
I've heard that we shouldn't give food to animals.
We shouldn't give food to animals.
I don't remember where I heard that.
Because they should starve.
No, they should find their own food.
They should find their own food. But they have found. You just happen to be claiming that it's yours.
Okay. Well, I heard that there's a risk that we get attached to this interaction with animals. And this should be
given up. So also we shouldn't give food to yeah, how you say, family members, because we might get attached. And it's said that the child, the first birth is animal birth, so it's not until they take shelter of the spiritual master, then the second birth, and then their human birth. So that means then feeding any child in a family before initiation would be feeding an animal, and you might get attached. Now, what about going out on Food for Life? Now, those guys are definitely
have
animals.
Have you seen them? They look disturbed, some of them.
Yeah, yeah. So then you might get disturbed. You might get attached, you know.
Yeah, seems like I didn't.
I mean, come on, the guy's wearing a top hat, you know. It's like that, you know.
Push around from Britain. Okay, so I'll let that one go.
Okay. We'll move on from that. No, generally it's they don't want you feeding them because then they call their friends and the next day you have this whole army out there and you don't want to. That's generally, it's more of a managerial thing. That's why I set on the side a little bit so they don't get too bold. Like that. Mm-hmm. Like that. Good thing we don't have seagulls, right? They're really aggressive. F, to break silence while offering worship to the Lord. So silence means talking about anything other than Krishna. Right? So if it's about Krishna, then it's fine. But if it's about anything else, then it's not. So during worship, one doesn't do that. G.
In the chant, you're offering worship to the Lord. So many times a Gayatri gets interrupted. So people don't understand.
They come up and start talking to you in that. Yeah. Well, if they're talking about Krishna, then... then that's they're not breaking the silence, they just picked the wrong time. That's all. But that wouldn't be breaking. So breaking the silence would mean you start talking about something else. You know, darshanartik, and you're gossiping about people that are there. You know, stuff like that. That's breaking silence. Or when you're sitting on the altar doing puja and then start talking about this and that. You could, you know, have a sign maybe. If it always happens, then you just have a sign hanging around your neck. you know, I am chanting Gayatri. You know. Yeah, Gayatri in progress. We're chanting Gayatri here, you know, like that. You know. G, to go to the toilet during the time of worshiping the deity, right? You go before, you go after, right? So that means then also you have to regulate your life so you don't, you know, do a ton of something or eat or, you know, so you'll regulate your life, then it'll work where you won't have any problem, right? You know, if you're sick, that's another thing, but that's not standard. But in other words, you want to adjust your lifestyle so you don't have that happen, yes. No, but that's not breaking silence, because it's in connection with the deity. Silence, when it means silence, doesn't mean mauna, meaning that there's no sound. It means mauna, meaning nothing mundane. So if you're asking them to do kirtan, that's fine. Anything connected with service or that's appropriate. You know, you're worshiping the deity there and start talking about, you know, some other things, and then you're distracted. Then that still, even though it's about the deity, would be inappropriate. But if it's appropriate, then, you know. So it's not that you sit there and you want a pin, so you kind of... Huh? Like that. One devotee used to practice mauna when he'd eat, so he wouldn't say anything. So when he wants something, you know... And so that after a while, devotees would get annoyed with it, and so they would, on purpose, not understand. They'd always pick up the wrong thing, and then, because he can't say anything, and then just put it on his plate, and like that. It was unfortunately funny, because it's like, no Gaudiyas not talk while they're eating, but somehow or another. So it was... It was interesting, yes.
Technical points about going to the bathroom. The top cloth is often removed.
If you're doing deity worship, then whatever you're wearing in the deity room, you know, has to be removed. That makes sense? So it's not just the chatter. It means chatter and dhoti would have to be removed. Right? Same for eating. You can't worship the deity in clothes that you've eaten in or slept in. So, but that doesn't mean you have to take a bath. Right? It means that clothes can't be used. So you ate. So if you're doing pujari service, you have on your clothes for puja, you're going to go back into the deity room, you take those off, put something else on, eat, wash yourself, then put change back into the clothes for the puja, and then do the puja. Does that make sense?
Does that include the copans?
No, generally copans are okay.
So, if you're eating, you don't have to take a bath?
No, it's the clothes that's the problem. The West, they like to make their own religious elements, so they're very strict about that one. But you don't have to be strict about washing your feet after going to the toilet, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of arbitrary. I'm not sure where it came up, but I mentioned that sometimes. No, but we follow very strictly. But it's not a rule, right? The deity worship doesn't mention it. Ayurveda doesn't recommend it, but they make it very strict. But it has nothing to do with anything. You don't take a bath right after eating.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And is it like in case of emotional pain, you need to pass water and then eat?
It's the clothes.
It's like if you go to the shower instead of...
That, if you can work it out, as long as no one's going to get you for that, then it's fine.
You don't need to...
You have to remove the clothes. You can't be wearing the clothes when you pass urine or eat or take a nap. Like that. The only rule is if you pass stool, then that's required a bath. Or taking a long... You're sleeping, you know. But a nap's one thing, but when it sleep long enough, you start to, you know, sweat and stuff. That's when it changes. Yes. Is that okay?
It's not about the clothes, you know. If we wear cotton, we can wear it only one time in front of the deity.
Cotton, generally use it for one day, and then it has to be washed. Yeah, I mean, if you want to be very strict, it can only be worn once. When you take it off, then it's not considered clean. But that's probably not going to work. So, you know, I would be comfortable with that it's, you use it for that day.
Yeah.
Silk can be, as long as you don't eat in it, go to the bathroom or sleep in it, then silk can be used over, you know, a week, 10 days, like that, even up to 2 weeks, like that. But it depends upon what you're doing. You know, if it's hot and sweaty, then I would still go with one day. But if it's not, you know, you don't have dropped anything on it or, you know, stuff like that. In other words, it looks clean, it doesn't have any smell, then it's fine, like that. But the cotton has to be washed with water at least every time it's used.
Does it have to be washed with soap also?
Which?
Soap?
No. Water is what purifies. I mean, if it needs, then you know, in other words, this term where appropriate, then it's applied. But it's silk is, it's there you're dealing then more with sun, moon, wind, water, they'll all purify. But cotton, it has to be purified in water. Like silk, you can put it out in the wind or in the sun and that, and it'll purify. But, you know, in other words, one shouldn't be using loopholes on this. You know, that's the point. Is. Yes. Is chanting the holy name the only atonement for these offenses? I think Prabhupada is going to give a list of them, but it's the ultimate one, so that one always applies. Yes.
So if you have a separate set of clothes for puja, or it's okay when you worship in a general sense, but concerning that it's clean.
Yeah, it means whatever you have, if it's clean. So you puja is generally in the morning, so you do like that, you know. But if it's going to be later in the day and you have to wear others around, then there has to be another set. Or it can be your regular clothes, just you have plenty of them, so you put on a second set in the evening and do the worship. But it, you know, it's up to you. Okay. H, to offer incense without offering flowers, right? So incense and flowers go together because the incense, the smell of that comes from the flowers. The flowers are the natural manifestation of the fragrance of the earth. In fact, most incense comes from, you know, flowers and that. So they go together very nicely. So it's not that. It means it's defense because the two go together very nicely. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like rice and ghee go together nicely. So therefore, it's an offense to offer rice without ghee or butter or something. You know what I'm saying? Because they go so well together. Does that make sense? To worship the deity with forbidden flowers. Right? So flowers that are specifically for, you know, like Kali. Cauliflowers, and you know, so if you come in with cauliflower, is broccoli okay? Like that. So yeah, so the hibiscus, unfortunately, though popular, is a forbidden flower. You know, flowers that don't generally have smell, this and that, but then that wipes out anything in the West. So you know, it's kind of. You know, so basically it just means ones that are for the devatas. So the hibiscus, that's for Devi, and then you have this other one, I forget what it's called. You only see it in India.
So.
No, that one's only because it doesn't have any fragrance. That's the problem with that. You can decorate, but it's not offered in the place where you offer flowers means for fragrance. But there's another one. It's kind of like a thick, fleshy flower, and it's got like a Shiva Linga inside, with this thing on top, and it's a very far out looking flower.
Orchid?
Hmm? No, it's not an orchid. But it's offered to Shiva, like that. So those ones you wouldn't offer.
What is it called?
I don't know.
Anthurium.
Hmm?
Anthurium.
I'm not sure. It means it's pink. And it's got these like yellow little things and a little Shiva linga in the middle, and that's just the way it
is. It has different colors.
Oh, okay. But it's just, it's for Shiva, so. That one's for Shiva, and the hibiscus is for Kali, so we don't use them. Yes?
I saw that they have Tulsi incense.
Tulsi incense.
Is that a bona fide thing?
Tulsi incense. You probably could use it, but the more the question would be is the quality and qualification of those who are making it, because the tulsi can be used in the yajna, you know, it can be used instead of sandalwood paste for grinding, you know, the wood can be used instead of the leaves. Touch, so it could be used, but one would have to be. I would consider that it wouldn't be so much a commercial thing like that. You know. In other words, don't plan on making a business out of making Tulsi incense. Jay, to begin worship without having washed one's teeth. Right, so one always has to brush the teeth before, you know, or after eating, washing the mouth like that. So the mouth always has to be clean, because you know Krishna has a good sense of smell, right? So.
Does brushing teeth contaminate whole body?
Basically, your clothes and stuff like that. Yeah.
The same like eating.
Yes. So washing mouth means washing mouth, doesn't mean brushing teeth. Means in the way of after eating, like that. You brush your teeth, and brushing teeth is always connected with bath. Before the morning bath or before the evening bath, you can brush your teeth. It means morning it has to be there. You can also do it in the evening, but not at noon. That's bad for the teeth. You know, so the three times a day brushing your teeth is not actually correct. Like that.
Couldn't you replace by the stick?
The teeth replace
the brush for the tool.
Toothpicks.
No, the
neem. No, it's at noontime. Oh, it means in general?
Yeah.
Yes. It means that's standard toothbrushes because you don't have one of those.
But for deity, no,
for deity worship.
I mean, because after you take prasad, it will contaminate.
No, but whenever you brush your teeth like that, then your clothes become dirty. Like that. Because brushing teeth is an item of the bathroom. It's not a... Like that. K, to begin worship after sex. So in other words, there has to be a bath. You know, you have to change clothes like that. And immediately also then there's the problem of the consciousness. So better there's some time. But in any case, the main thing is at least there's a proper bath and change of clothes. L, to touch a lamp, dead body, or a woman during a menstrual period, or to put on red or bluish clothing, unwashed clothing, the clothing of others, or soiled clothing. So any of these, anything that would make one unclean, or how you say the red means bright red. If you've ever seen Kali worshippers and that, they wear bright red cloth. That's what it means. It's plain red cloth. It doesn't mean, you know, some red in a sari or this or that. And blue, it's that sham blue. That's generally what Radharani wears. So out of respect, we don't wear that as a cloth. You know, like the bluish black. So it's not like that. That's just blue. Huh? Yeah, but it's not fully like that. It's got some in it. Kind of, but no one would quite catch it. You know. So in other words, it's the red is a specific because that goes along with a specific type of worship. The blue, it's out of consideration of Radharani wears it. Like that.
Touching the lamp,
because the lamp's prashad. Or it can be, depends upon what it means, touching a lamp. Now, the prashad means you'd have to wash your hands, but if you pick up a lamp, the lamp is got oil on it, so you'd have to wash in that properly, because otherwise oil picks up dirt.
What is soiled glove?
Soiled means it's got dirt on it. It doesn't look proper, you know. Soiled, stains, different. It doesn't look proper.
Starched.
Unwashed. Unwashed generally means you've worn it and unwashed. Or if it's brand new, you bought it and it hasn't been washed the first time, but it still has starch in it. Okay. Other offenses are to worship the deity after seeing a dead body, to pass air before the deity, to show anger before the deity, and to worship the deity just after returning from a crematorium. Right? So these things are repeated. So they mean, you know, some of them, deity doesn't like that. After eating, one should not worship the deity until one has digested his food. Right? Because otherwise one might sit there and burp, or, you know, one won't be focused, brain doesn't work, can't remember the mantras. You know, instead of, you know, in other words, if it's something very light, that's one thing, but a full meal, then that should always be avoided. Yes? No, because he said that they should make a book on it that has all that. So he said. So it's just because he's giving the principles. These are general principles. These are rules, but it's general principles to ensure proper consciousness, purity, you know, proper environment. Generally speaking, they get across the basic of what you're doing. Because otherwise, how, unless you're saying, my dear Lord, please accept this lamp. But if you're not, then the mantra says that. That's what it's for. You can, but as long as you say it, you know, point is that it's said. But the thing is with time, the mental might or might not go nicely. If one's focused enough, then it'll be fine. But if one's not focused, then it tends to be a little blurry. You know what I'm saying? So that's why generally these things are said. What you can do is check as mantras that you do use mentally, try saying them out loud. And if they come out properly, then everything's fine. But if you have problems saying them, then better to say them out loud. You know, until they're properly established. But everything takes time, so cooking takes time, but Maggi noodles, it's only 2 minutes. No, but those are said while you're picking it up. It means you're picking it up and you're saying the mantra like that. They're not separate like that. Those aren't. But yeah, those aren't. That's true. Yeah. Yes.
When doing manasapuja, then the mantras can be used or not used.
Manasapuja is more is that you're offering. That's not so important that the mantras are used. That's more. That the facilities of the paraphernalia that you're offering, then you can do whatever you would like to do rather than what you have. So what will happen if the Manasa Puja is done nicely, then you've offered something very opulent, though you don't have it. But then when you actually go to offer the item, you'll remember what you offered in the Manasa Puja. Right? So one, you've offered it there, but the quality of it, it'll take on that quality. You understand? That's the advantage of it. The Manasa Puja also stops all, you know, distractions of the mind, because you can't do Manasa Puja and be distracted. You can install the paraphernalia and do this and that and be totally distracted, because you do it every day. But the Manasa Puja, you actually have to stop thinking about anything else and just focus on it. So then there's a better chance after the Manasa Puja, your worship will go better. Does that make sense? So Manasa Puja is not for the mantras and this. That's for, you know, what you're, you know, gold pots and jeweled and all these kind of things. That's what it's for.
So the mantras are specifically for physical?
Yes, the mantras are for that. Nor should one touch the deity or engage in any deity worship after eating safflower oil or hing. These are also offenses. Safflower. The natural food freaks are going to freak about this. Hing means hing has a very strong flavor. So something that's made with a predominance of hing, one wouldn't eat that and then immediately after go in the deity room. Right? Because then you'll have that fragrance. Because hing doesn't go away very easily. There's just a little hing in the preparation that it's not tasted, but there are preps where the hing is made prominent. You know, you have these rich sabjis and that. One's called hinging. It means they use an abundance of hing to give that very strong hing flavor. Or, you know, your hing kachoris or different things like that. So the hing is a very strong flavor. So if it stands out, then it will also still be there on the breath for some time. You know, or digestion. So that's all. And safflower, then, it creates a fragrance. One, if you're... you know, in flatulence or in just on the you know, it comes out.
Perspiration.
Yeah, perspiration and that. So it's not recommended, though it's considered the highest in polyunsaturates and all that kind of thing. But it's better. Safflower oil is not. Vaishnavas just don't use it. Let's put it that way. That's the basic thing. Eggplant means your purple eggplants, that's standard. Yeah, those are okay. But the problem is your green ones, and especially ones that go green towards white, and I've even heard of there's pure white ones. So the Shastra mentions, I think you get them in Japan, pure white. But in India, you don't see the pure white ones. So it mentions white ones aren't to be used. So I would expect that would mean the green and white, you know, those ones. Because the chemical in the eggplant that's not good for you, means eggplant has a chemical in it that it makes the semen in the body thin, right? So in the white ones, then it's greater. So though it takes on an element that the amount of passion it generates is like non-vegetarian food. So that's why certain things aren't eaten, though they're technically vegetarian. So the white eggplant, the red lentils, you know, these are things that generate, you know, enough passion in the body that it's the same as what non-veg would do. You know, or something like mushrooms that'll create ignorance. You know, like that. So that's why they're avoided. Not that they're vegetarian as such, but they're not used because the effect is not vegetarian. Does that make sense?
You were mentioning you also have
tomatoes.
Tomatoes and chili. You said that they all have the same poison.
they're the same family, so they all have something in it that's poison. You know, so the eggplant, it comes out in that way. The tomatoes and the chilies, it's in the skin and seed. So in the chilies, you can't avoid it, but tomatoes, you can. That's why, like Italians, they always take the skin off. It's poor, you can't digest it. Is that... In other places, the following offenses are listed. A, to be against the scriptural injunctions of the Vedic literature, or to disrespect within one's heart the Srimad Bhagavatam while externally falsely accepting its principles. Right? It says, you can't be against scriptural injunctions. So it's not that, oh, well, these are fanatical, we don't follow that. It means there's a variety of injunctions that are based on the same principle. Like we saw here, to speak lies before the deity, talk loudly before the deity, talk nonsense, cry before the deity, argue before the deity, chastise, use harsh words, blasphemy, use vulgar language. So these are all various languages of the same principle of dealing in a mundane way in front of the deity. Right? To break silence, that's like the softest of them. So that's the principle that has to be dealt with. Right? So in other words, that mundane element that comes up. So sometimes you have a principle, to keep the principle in place, certain rules may not be followed, but the principle has to be in place. So to just say, we don't care for the rules, that then is an offense to the deities, right? So that's to be avoided, right? So we don't have any problem with the scriptural rules. It's just whether they apply to us in our situation, right? They apply to someone else in their situation, but not to us. Does that make sense? Like the scriptural rules on Kali worshipper offering a goat, right? They're bona fide rules, just we don't follow them. You know, they're not for us, but they're bona fide rules, and someone who's performing that kind of worship, then they have to follow those rules. But we're not interested, so we don't follow them. Because we're worshipping Krishna, it's replaced. You know, you can't drop a rule without replacing it. Right? If you feel something doesn't apply, then that means there must be something higher that does apply. Right? That's the point. Or to hear, you know, Bhagavatam, oh, it's so fanatic, or no, we don't follow that, these things like that, you know, it's so strict, or this and that, and, you know, it's just, this is, that's the way it is. You know, it may take us some time to be able to appreciate, to apply it in our life, but that's actually the facts, it's actually the standard. B, to introduce different shastras. Right, so to introduce shastras that are out of the line, you know, is unnecessary. Right? Like that. Because our acharyas, then they give, you know, whatever is necessary. So we don't have to bring in, you know, some Shaiva Tantra or something like that to bring out. No, our literatures already discuss. So our line, we have literatures, we stick within those literatures. C, to chew pan and betel before the deity. One, it's messy, and two is, you know, it's just we don't follow those things. D, to keep flowers for worship on the leaf of a castor oil plant, right? Because it'll take on some fragrance there. So this castor oil is not considered. The oil itself is good for lamps, but the point is it's for lamps. It shouldn't be. You know, I'm not sure if the leaf itself is oily or if we get a fragrance from it, but most probably don't have to worry about it. But it's like you're out picking flowers, so the castor leaves are very big. So picking one of those and then putting all the flowers in there, that won't be done. Yes.
In the West, castor oil could be a poison.
Castor oil.
So but here it's obviously extracted in such a way that the poison element is removed. So that could be coming from the leaf.
Could be, but it's just a matter of poison and means how much quantity. You know what I'm saying? It's like seawater acts like a poison. You drink it, then it clears the system out. So castor oil does the same thing, but it's not necessarily that it is a poison as such. But you know, medicine also includes poisons. So. You know, but the point is, castor leaf is not used. Okay. E, to worship the deity in the afternoon, right? So it means after lunch, that's the deity's time to rest, so that's not when you should be doing. So it's either before that or in the evening, because that's rest time. Because even if you're not doing anything at that time with the deity is. You know, that's his time, you know, at Radha Kund with Radharani and everybody, and that's when, that's their time. So, you know, yes. Yeah, I would say from 1 to 4, keep them closed. Open the curtains at 4. Better than nothing. You know, at least people get darshan, but that's their time. See, because here it's a matter of not having anybody or any facility. You know, so then when it's not a matter of there's so many people coming for darshan, therefore the deities are left open. You know what I'm saying? It's not like in Jagannath Puri. So one always has to be careful that one doesn't find religious rules to support one's lacking. Does that make sense? So there it's like, okay, if nobody's there, then at 4 o'clock you open. But then the problem is if there was someone there to open the curtain, they could also do the arti. You know, so. Oh, okay. Then no problem. Then someone can open. Yeah, great, great. You know, so what's his name? You know, Bhakta Joe can go in his overalls and that, and the curtain. So it'll work. Like that. Okay. F, to sit on the altar or to sit on the floor to worship the deity without a seat, right? So one's always on a seat, because the seat, the asan represents the earth, so then it's proper there, right? Like that.
That's within the deity room? Outside the deity room?
Yeah, anytime one's doing worship, one's always on an asan.
And I think this asan is only for that.
Asan
is only for that purpose.
Yeah, it means that your asans for the deity worship, yes, would be for, you wouldn't use them for prasad also in that. And you would have ones for prasad, you have ones for deity worship, or you have ones for like sitting in the temple,
yes,
like that, that are different from the prasad or in the, like that. So yeah. Yes. Yeah, anything can be put. I mean, your traditional is the kusasan, but if that's not available, then anything like that. Anything pure. You know, cotton or silk or like that. You wouldn't use probably rayon or, you know, an old jean jacket. Or, you know. But it was my favorite. You know. Offer everything to you. Yes.
Is there a rule that we should use also just sitting in the temple or taking prasadam?
Generally, one sits on something.
Awesome.
But, you know, it's not as important, but generally one does. But at least in the deity worship, then one should. But also taking darshan, all these are part of the deity worship. That's what its meaning is, that anything to do with interacting with the deity in the temple is part of the pancharatra process. You know, even preparing, coming to the temple. Abhigamana means what you do before you get to the temple. Getting up, offering obeisances to the spiritual master, rolling the bed, cleaning the place, brushing teeth, taking bath, dressing, tea lock, chanting Gayatri, you know, going to the temple, offering obeisances, ringing the bell. These are all abhigamana. That's before you get into the temple. Like that. And then swadhyaya means what you're doing outside that. So chanting japa, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping devotees, taking care of guests, worshipping Tulsi, honoring prasad, worshipping the Dham, cleaning, these are all like that. So only, and then upadhyaya, you're preparing things for the worship. But you're not actually, like you're cooking for the deity or grinding sandwich paste, picking flowers, but they haven't been offered. So only the yoga and ijas actually connected, and yoga is even the paraphernalia in yourself, bringing them to the spiritual platform. So Ija, 1 out of 5, is actually worshipping the deity. you know, in that way, what we would think of worshiping the deity. And so worshiping the spiritual master, in yoga, that's to bring yourself to the spiritual platform. That's why the Guru Puja goes on in the temple room, because everyone's taking part in the deity worship, so those aspects have to be attained. You're worshiping the deity through the spiritual master. So before the worship, you are worshiping the spiritual master. So the pujari will do it inside the deity room. And this ensures everybody who's come to take part in the deity worship by observing then also worships the spiritual master. Right? So it's part of the pancharatrik process. Right? So that's why it's there.
If you're standing while worshiping, is an asana also essential?
Yeah. It's generally there. Because there's otherwise the distraction, because it represents the earth, so she expects something to be there. Because otherwise, then one will be distracted. If one's on the bare ground, then the energies go into the ground. If you have the mat, then they stay. Like that. So. Means someone who is beyond conditioning may not be affected by it, or at least the Madhyam platform may not be affected, or minimally. But for the neophyte, then there'll be more effect. Does that make sense? So the point is it's the neophyte that worries about not following the rules. The Madhyama, generally following will be beneficial, right? That, but for the neophyte, it's quite essential. Right, Uttama doesn't require it at all, because they're already following what's necessary from the rule on the transcendental plane. Does that make sense? Right. To touch the deity with the left hand while bathing the deity, right? Because the left hand isn't considered clean, so there'll always be a cloth or something else like that. Or you bathing, you use the right hand, and then after after they're dry, then you can use the left hand. Yes. When you're bathing them. No, moving them, it's okay. But generally, unless it's a long distance, I tend to take them one at a time. Right? Because you can't, especially if they're all dressed and everything, it's sometimes harder to see that all the cloth is nice. Like Radharani, you have to get under the skirt and hold. If you use one hand, you might not, and then you pull something. You know what I'm saying? If it can be done. If it's very far, then you might have to carry. You don't want to leave one deity alone, but if it's like from here to here, then I would tend to take one at a time.
Okay.
Is picking flowers with the left hand? It can be done if you're left-handed, but is there a problem with the right hand?
Well, sometimes the flower would be that way. Grab the ladder or something.
Then you can use it, but the point is it's not that. Therefore, it's no problem. The normal thing is. What you can do with the right hand, you would do. Things that require two hands, then you use both. If something requires one hand, you generally always use the right. Unless it's cleaning after going to the toilet.
Mark?
Yes.
I've been here about the last list of forbidden flowers, and one of the things cited is a flower that's been carried in the left hand.
A flower that's been carried in the left hand. It depends. In other words, the left hand isn't considered that clean, so then it's best to avoid. If possible, yes.
Yesterday we read how it is forbidden to touch Tulasi with left hand.
To touch Tulasi with left hand. Where did you read that it was forbidden?
Oh.
I've never heard it's forbidden. Because it says that when you pick Tulsi, the leaves and the manjaris, you shouldn't shake. So that generally indicates two hands. One hand you hold, and the other hand, the right hand, then you pull the leaf or the manjari. Because otherwise some go in there and just pull like this, and then she shakes, so that's not proper. So So that would indicate the other hand is used. Does that make sense? But you're picking with the right. But?
No button, I
have button. Oh, no button, okay. Good.
Regarding having the deity, so we concluded yesterday discussion that we are against having and not worshipping murti at someone's home just of sentiment. But are we against having any three-dimensional form of Krishna?
Not necessarily. At least they had that one of, what was it called? In English you say the boss. They had, I forget where they got, some Hindu or something like that. It was like this big. Just, a statue that would, sit in, that you sit in a corner somewhere or something like that. So he used to sit on the pillar before you went into the deity, into the temple room. There was another room. He was there. I can't remember what his name was. Something with a K.
Kartashayi.
Yeah, Kartashayi. Which means, the guy who's in charge that makes everything happen, The doer, So he probably laugh. He's the boss. Right? So you might have, if you have like that.
Like a piece of decoration to remind them of.
Yes, but the point is you're not, there's no commitment. My point is that you're taking on the deities because they're deities, but not taking the commitment. The point is people can do it, but if we understand the process, then we'd be a little bit more careful about making such decisions. If someone's already doing that, and they're, don't bother them. But the point is for oneself, one should consider what is happening, so whether one gets involved in this or not.
So many devotees just have a piece of decoration which reminds them about Krishna, and sometimes they worship them.
Definitely, yes. I think you've gotten the point. It's just like, The point is that, you understand, this is what's meant by mental speculation. The mind goes through different ways to take the intelligence of what are all the options that I could come out to get with what I want. Like that. In other words, we're not starting with how can I serve the deity, but how can I add the deity to my scene. Right? And my scene doesn't include all these other things when I don't feel like it. When I do, of course, then I want the options. So it's options. Right? But it's like you have to have something just because maybe you'll be able to use it. But that's, Krishna's got to be a bit more than that. You know what I'm saying? One is making more commitment of that with one's family. So then why not God? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Is that we're committed, we'll feed our family every day, we'll see that they have clothes, they have medicine, they have proper rest, proper everything. But the deity we won't worry about. You know what I'm saying? Why? It's not possible, it's not practical. The point is then don't get involved. You know what I'm saying? Then my point is you get the full benefit by having pictures. Right? And for most devotees, the temple is not actually that far away, that if they really wanted to do some worship that they're willing to do every 2 weeks or once a week, they could go to the temple and do something on once a week. Or as I mentioned, then you have them in a box, pull them out, do your full puja and all that, then put them back in the box. These are the standards. People may not follow them, they may not like them. We've been doing these lack of standards for the last 30 years, but I'm only just talking what are the standards, what works. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it doesn't benefit by not following the rules. Means it doesn't benefit. These ideas that, if you have the deities, everyone will be inspired. No, inspired people worship deities. Uninspired people don't notice the deities. Do you understand? That's the point. Uninspired, don't worship deities. People who are inspired worship deities. So to say, we'll put in the deities, that will inspire everybody, that's not the way to go about it. When the community is inspired steadily, then you increase the thing. That's what Prabhupada mentioned before. Someone who's steady in devotional service, then it's compulsory. But if they're not steady, it's not compulsory to have that kind of worship. Does that make sense? I think we have. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get through. There's still yet too many. Okay. H. To worship the deity with a stale or used flower. Right? Stale means it loses its niceness, its freshness, its fragrance. Or used means it's already been used. So then, you know, you don't use it again. Like that. You know, you may have flowers in the vases, but they're just the vases. You don't offer them again. It's a matter of they just sit there and do that same thing. You don't, having sat there all day or for a few days, then pick a flower off of there and use it for the arctic. No, it stays in the vase. Right?
Yeah. Any flowers that don't have any smell?
How about flowers that don't have smell? It's a problem. I would expect... It's a symptom of sin that a place has flowers that doesn't have smell like that. But I've heard it said that Prabhupada had mentioned that the level of impiety on the planet was such that there wouldn't be any fruits or flowers. But because there's devotees, that's the only reason that there is. So be happy there's something, right? But, okay, said.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Sanyatai Gaura Premanandi.